Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. My name is Paul Harvey, and I'm looking for answers. What does it mean to be successful? What does it mean to have a good, well-lived life? This podcast is conversations with people that look like they have it sorted. I've been in marketing for 20 years, and like every industry, there are stars, people that are leaders in their field. My guest today is one of those leaders, Doberman Dan, and he'll explain that name. He has been a serial entrepreneur for over 30 years. He's a best-selling author and an A-list copywriter. Yes, a gun for hire in the sales and copy world. He's also a professional musician and composer, and his writing success allows him the time to pursue that passion. But there is a story and a journey here. The idea of a music career started at the age of 7. However, coming from a poor family and with a low self-esteem background, goals and planning were not in the mindset. In his early years, he worked without direction. And while the dream of being a professional musician was there, the reality was to earn a living. You will hear how he joined the Dayton Police Department, how he explored multi-level marketing, and how he went on for 9 years of serial business failure. He ultimately discovered his success in writing for the bodybuilding world, and this saw him leave the police department and become a professional writer.
I never, if somebody would have told me, oh, Dan, you're going to get really passionate about this direct response marketing and this mail order business stuff, you know, back in the day, I probably would have said, what? Nah. I mean, yeah, I guess, you know, if I can make money at it, that's cool. But get passionate about it? No. But, you know, after I was in it, after I was doing it and felt the thrill of winning.
In this interview, there are revelations. We discuss aspects of his journey that have never been publicly revealed. Our conversation is a business interview, but it's also a discussion about life and finding meaning. Welcome. So welcome, Dan, or Doberman Dan, as you are known to many people.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. I've been looking forward to this, and I really appreciate the invitation to be on your show.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to be with me today. So, okay, Doberman Dan, why? First of all, I think I need to actually clarify this, because a lot of people who listen to this podcast won't know why you're called Doberman Dan. So can you just clear that up for us quickly or at all? Or maybe it's not quick, but
yeah. It was a happy accident, I'll say. So how I got the nom de plume here I used to have, well, I had a couple businesses in the bodybuilding niche. And so I was writing articles online, and I wrote articles for a few of the bodybuilding magazines. And one of the articles was about my Doberman puppy at the time got in a fight at the park with this big, bulky Rottweiler. You know, like the Rottweiler, I think, weighed 120 pounds. And my poor little Doberman puppy was just like 70 pounds. But long story short, my Doberman won the fight because he was just so lean and quick and agile, and the Rottweiler was just big and bulky. And so I put in the article, you know, about like, geez, I realized I've turned into the Rottweiler. I've been eating too much pizza, drinking too much beer, you know, so I got to get back in Doberman shape. And I signed off, you know, in quotes, Doberman, quote, Dan. And it stuck. And like Bob Kennedy, the publisher of Muscle Mag, started calling me that. And I thought, well, I didn't expect that, but I'm fine with it, because I've been my entire life, I've never liked my last name. It's a very unusual last name. So I thought, great. I kind of got stuck with this pen name, but I'll just use that. Now I never have to use my last name again. So nobody can
see. I don't even know your last name. Your last name.
That's the goal. Now, and once I tell you my last name, Paul, you'll understand why. So it's Gallipoo.
Yeah, I could see that would be a problem.
Can you imagine what the kids did with that when I was in elementary school?
Yeah. It's funny because you and I, well, you, I don't go with you, but you go back with me quite a while because I have been listening to various things with you for probably 10 years or more, I think, because I used to listen to a lot of Glenn stuff.
Oh, you're Glenn Livingston, right?
Glenn Livingston, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and he quoted you quite a lot, and I think you had quite a few calls with him. So there's kind of like, for me, I've heard you for years. So it's quite a privilege for me to be talking to you tonight.
Well, thank you. So you must be a glutton for punishment then, if you've been listening to me for years.
Glutton for punishment, yeah, I am a bit. Okay, so look, let's get into why I'm talking to you this evening. So this is called Life, Passion and Business. And it came about because I've reached a point in my life where I'm kind of going, hang on a minute, there must be a bit more to life than just eating, drinking, having children, raising families and making money. There has to be something. And so I started to look around for people that kind of looked like they had the answer. And you know, various people I'd met or heard or listened to kind of have a solution. It's about how do they bring those aspects there, their passion into what they do? And you're one of those people as far as I'm concerned. So how did Doberman Dan, and we know about the Doberman bit, how did Dan become Dan? How did you get to where you are today?
So long story short, well, by the way, I love the title of your podcast because I too have been running those same questions through my mind. Is that all there really is? I mean, yeah. There's got to be more to this stuff, you know? So how I came to this, I had no life direction whatsoever. You know, my parents did the best they could. They were poor and poverty minded. And my mother literally grew up in what I call third world poverty. I mean, she grew up in the deep South in Mississippi in the 40s to alcoholic parents. And, you know, literally for periods of time, didn't even have shoes. Didn't have a meal regularly. So, you know, all this life planning and goal setting and go to college and stuff, that just wasn't taught in my family. So I had no direction. I stumbled after high school. I stumbled around to different jobs. What I really wanted to be, Paul, was a professional musician. And I made that decision at age 7. And for me, that was it. That was what I was supposed to do with my life. And that was all I wanted to do. But long story short, it's really hard to feed yourself in that job. So I kept getting other jobs and stumbled around. I got a job in what they call loss prevention at a department store. And this was back in the day prior to the security camera. So we would literally walk the floor looking for shoplifters. And I met a bunch of the police officers there. And then some of my coworkers said, hey, we're going to go take the civil service test for the city of Dayton for police officer. You want to come with us? And my response was, well, yeah, I'm off that day. I don't have anything else going on. That was the extent of my life and career planning. And, you know, long story short, I got on the police department and realized really quickly that that wasn't where I wanted to spend my life. And so somebody hit me up for the Amway business. Have you ever been hit up for MLMs?
Oh, yes.
Like that?
I've done Amway. I've been there. I've done Nutrition for Life. I've been hit up with a few of those Kool-Aid environments.
That's a great description of it too, Kool-Aid environment. And for a while, I totally drank the Kool-Aid. But I failed miserably at it, but I still am very happy for the experience because it got me to thinking like, hey, a guy like me actually could have a business of his own. Mm-hmm. So when I got to thinking in that direction, now I was not just a full-time cop. It was full-time cop, part-time entrepreneur, but serial failure entrepreneur for 9 years, just business after business after business, just, you know, failed, never got off the ground, never made a penny. I lost money, lost time, was depressed. And finally, it was after 9 years of continuous failure and a bunch of different traditional business ventures, I discovered direct response marketing and copywriting through Dan Kennedy. And then that launched, I followed that model that he was using and launched an info product business in the bodybuilding niche. Mm-hmm. And that was the first business after 9 years of serial failure. That was the first business that was successful. And about 12 months later, it was making enough money that I was able to leave my job, which was the goal all those previous 9 years, to start something to allow me to leave my job. So that's, I know that's a long story, but ever since then, that's more or less what I've been doing to support my two bad habits of sleeping indoors and eating, is starting these various businesses with direct response marketing, both online and offline, and writing copy. And then now I'm writing copy for clients as a hired gun copywriter. I started that in 2012. So that's what got me here.
Wow. So the bodybuilding niche that you'd wrote for initially, was that something that you were interested in? Was it something that you had knowledge in?
That was also a passion of mine. I had started lifting weights, I guess, back when I was like 15, because I was the scrawny kid in the comic book ad, the one getting the sand kicked in his face.
Oh, that one, yeah.
That was a passion at the time, not so much now, but now that I'm 53 and all my joints hurt. But I just went to that market because I realized, oh, I understand this market. I know exactly what they want. I can create. I know exactly the kind of products to create. And I know the language. I know how to sell them on these products. So it was kind of me just going after the low-hanging fruit, since I already understood the market.
Mm-hmm. So where does your passion fit into that? Were you passionate about bodybuilding when you started writing copy for it?
I was. And, you know, I even figured at the time, like, hey, if this doesn't bring in much money, if it's just like a little part-time kitchen table business, I'm totally fine with it, because I'm writing about stuff that I'm passionate about. And, you know, I get to research supplements because once the information product side was successful, I started selling supplements also. So, you know, I like, oh, good. I get to research supplements, try them out on myself, be my own guinea pig, which I was going to do anyway. So I thought, right, hey, even if this thing isn't a big time success, it doesn't matter, because I'm working in a business that I'm passionate about.
Right. And so does that carry on through? I mean, so what's your... I mean, is that how you pick how you work, that you can bring passion to it? Or do you have a way of actually saying, well, I can be passionate about the end result and what I'm writing is not so relevant?
So I've done both. I've started businesses that I'm passionate about, and then I've started others simply because I had identified an opportunity, or the timing was right in a certain market or with certain products. And I did it just for the money. And, you know, I have a lot of people tell me, like, well, hey, it doesn't matter what it is. If I make a money, I can get passionate about it. Well, for me, not so much. Like, for example, Paul, the second bodybuilding supplement business I started was in 2004. And I still was passionate about that stuff back then. But then after about 7 years, not so much. My focus was on other things. You know, my passion was really dying out for the bodybuilding niche, period, but definitely for bodybuilding supplements. And in spite of the fact that the business was successful and making good money, I really did just put it on the back burner and did the minimum amount of effort just to keep things going, you know?
It's interesting you say that, because one of the previous podcast interviewees, Victor, he had a cycling podcast, and he kept it running and running and running. I mean, they've got hundreds of issues, and they were trying to stop it for over a year.
Hmm.
you know, they were trying to stop making these programs for over a year. And it's just like, I need to stop this. I need to stop this. But they just couldn't walk away from it for a year or more. So I understand that it's difficult. And but things do have their natural cycle.
They do. What I wound up doing, you know, and I've had a lot of people tell me, geez, you're stupid for getting out of a business that was, you know, growing and making money just because you lost the passion for it. Well, so, you know, I figured this is not the right attitude, and I'm not serving my customers in the way they really should be served in this business. So I put it up for sale, and some guys who are passionate about that niche bought the business.
That's good. That's the right way to do it in a way, because you were doing a disservice in a way by not being passionate about it. So in the end, it didn't become about them. It became about you.
Exactly. And, you know, I've had people tell me that they just don't care. They don't have to be passionate about something, and I guess, you know, if I were interested in something, could I make a business of it? Yes. And it would keep my attention for a while, but I'm the serial entrepreneur. You know, if I'm not passionate about it, I'm probably going to drop it to find something I can get passionate about. Cause it's, you know, you're going to work a lot at a business, and it's just so much, at least in my eyes, it's so much more pleasant if you're working in a market, a niche with products that you're passionate about.
So how do you find passion in something? What's the key for you?
My passions have changed. Like I said, bodybuilding still an interest, but not so much. Definitely not like before. Now my passions are music and helping people with their marketing and helping people develop businesses and grow businesses and write, you know, direct response sales copy. So now I have my business is now based around that. In addition to me doing client work, consulting on marketing, and also occasionally writing sales copy, I have a membership that is about, you know, all those things, teaching people how to start a business, how to market online, teaching them about copy, teaching them how to grow a business. And so that's my passion. That's my business. Out of that business, actually, it also functions as a client generator, because my best clients come out of my membership. And then the music stuff, I don't have to make money with it now, which is it's a good thing, because it's really hard to do. So now my business funds my music. So the music has always been the number one passion in my life. Mm-hmm. And now I feel really, really fortunate that I don't have that pressure of having to do it for money. I let the business fund that. So I'm working on my second CD now. And
Put them for sale?
I sold the first one I put up for sale. It's for sale on Amazon and iTunes and CD Baby, although I don't think I want you hearing it, Paul. It was my first.
I was tempted.
It was my first CD, and let me just say it was okay. But okay. So I learned a lot. The second one will be much better.
You were confident enough to put it up for sale, so it must be okay enough to be actually out there.
I let somebody shame me into putting it up for sale. He called my manhood into question. Yes, you created that.
Oh, no, that's the worst thing someone can do to you. You just have to go with it then, don't you?
I had to. I'm like, really, from my point of view, this kind of sucks. And he's like, created it. You don't have any guts if you don't put it out. So I put it out there. And I also announced it to my list and, got my first ever royalty check for music. It was... let me see, $211.82.
Well, it's a good feeling. Good feeling to get a check, wherever it comes from.
That's what I thought.
Okay, look, I really appreciate where we've gone with this. I just want to just nip back in time a little bit, just to sort of like to ask you about your experience in the police force. So what did that give you? What did your police force experience give you in terms of your passion and your life and how you now how you approach these things now?
Well, it was a really good experience because I was 20 years old when I was in the police academy, and at 20, you think you're a man, but I look back now like, oh my God, I was such a kid and I was so naive. But, that experience on the police department, and I was fortunate enough that they sent me to work on the really bad side of town and work the night shift. So
were you a big young man, muscular young man then, all this weightlifting stuff? Did you look like you meant business?
I was probably, back then soaking wet, maybe 150 pounds. And I'm only 5'6" tall, so not a big guy.
But going to the bad side of town must have been a bit of a okay. I'll do this.
It was a shock. I mean, at first I'm like, oh my gosh, they threw me into the deep end of the pool. But it was a great experience because, I got to figure out, as I call it, street cop psychology. I got to figure out a lot of psychology lessons really, really fast. And I had to in order to survive. So it was, it was a good experience. And later when I got into marketing, I was able to connect some of the dots like, oh, I remember this on the police department and we figured out why people react this way, and then that just all ties into marketing because it's, it's all about psychology.
Yes, a lot more about psychology than everyone ever realizes, I think. But then I'm a marketer, so I would say the same thing. So, okay, moving forward. Yeah. So obviously the police force provided you a great deal and your music is obviously a great source of inspiration for you. So what of the future? How do you look forward and plan it? Are you working in 5-year cycles? Do you have a plan or are you seeing how it develops?
I keep telling myself after X number of years, I'm going to quote unquote retire, but I know that'll never happen. Like if I decide, well, I'm such an age or in so many years, I'm going to retire. I probably at the most that will last 30 days and I'll be back into this stuff. It's like the mafia. No matter how hard I try to leave, they keep pulling me back in. It's just stuff for me is fun. The cracking the code, creating something from nothing, flying it up the flagpole and see how many people salute it with their wallets, so to speak. I mean, I've been doing this almost a quarter of a century and it still hasn't lost its thrill. So I don't have any really long-term plans. I mean, most long-term is a couple years. And it all revolves around my skill set, which is all this stuff, figuring out markets, cracking the code on copy, coming up with new products to sell, new businesses, new projects, cracking the code on that and finding out what works, what doesn't work. And mostly, I intend to keep my main business going, which I affectionately call the Marketing Camelot. That's my membership for entrepreneurs, marketers, and copywriters, because I'm extremely passionate about that, but all kinds of interesting things come out of it. I've met some really, really interesting salt of the earth people and opportunities to do one-on-one coaching come from that. And then opportunities to launch new businesses and get involved with businesses. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, my long-term plan is to keep doing what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm. So what's your process? Cause I mean, it's like some entrepreneurs have this early morning start thing. Some say, oh, I don't do a thing before midday. Do you have a kind of a perfect day, how you operate?
I was saying this to my wife today because, a couple days this week, I slept in. not like super late, but I slept in about an hour later than I normally do. But today I got up earlier than I normally do and got a head start on the day. And I feel so much more productive when I get an early start. And I probably feel that way because I am more productive. As far as like writing, what drives my business and what drives this whole Doberman Dan engine is me putting words on paper, or more like on the computer screen. So when I get up in the morning and get that done within the first few hours of the day, that's what works for me. And then other stuff, you know, like interviews or phone calls I need to do or whatever, doing that later on the afternoon works for me. So mornings are blocked out for me. I make an appointment with myself and they're literally blocked out on the calendar. Like I've got, from 7 to 8 blocked out every day for either one of these three: guitar practice, recording, or music composition. And then 8 a.m. to 11 is blocked out for writing. Then after that, I can be a little bit more flexible, but those morning times are sacred for me. And when I get up and stick to that routine, I'm so much more productive.
Gosh, do you have breakfast before 7 then?
I stopped eating breakfast for a while. This is going to sound, this will probably sound crazy to you, Paul, but, and started drinking this infamous bulletproof coffee, which all it is just coffee in a blender with butter. You've heard of it?
Yeah. Oh, of course I've heard of it. Bulletproof coffee. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Apparently it's really good.
It really is. If anybody's turning their nose up at it, don't knock it till you tried it. It really is good. So I started doing that and I just stopped eating breakfast. So I don't usually eat till about noon. Although recently my wife has been beating me up about it. She wants me to start eating breakfast again. So I'll squeeze breakfast in there sometime.
No, I have heard of the bulletproof coffee thing. Quite a lot of people I know do it, and sometimes it's done as a weight loss thing, energy and weight loss thing. I think a lot of bodybuilders do it, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I lost a good amount of weight doing that. You know, the intermittent fasting where I would stop eating at around 6 p.m. at night, and then in the morning just nothing but bulletproof coffee, usually maybe a couple cups. And then I wouldn't eat till definitely after 12, but more like the closer around 2 p.m. I could, the better. So, keep it to a 4 to 6 hour window when I eat and then stop eating at 6. And I did lose a lot of weight that way. I'm not currently doing it now, but, another thing I noticed in the morning, that hunger, it takes, the bulletproof coffee takes the edge off the hunger. And it seems to give you a bit more mental focus. I don't think it's just in my head because other people report the same thing from it.
Without getting geeky on this, and I've got a friend who's quite into her nutrition and stuff, and it's something to do with the keto process. I think something to do with the fact that you're not putting carbohydrate in your system, so you're not getting the insulin highs and lows.
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting the energy you need and the caffeine you need. So that's what's pushing you through. So it's fascinating stuff, though, all this. I mean, we were told for years that fat was bad, and it now looks like it wasn't.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
But there we are, I don't know where we are with that one. So, I really appreciate where you've been, how candid you've been. If someone is, I start this conversation by saying, for me, it's about that search. It's about what is life about? So what is success for you? How would you define success? Is success money or is it something else?
In years past, I always would have responded with money. And
yeah, of course.
And the amount kept creeping up too. So here's a good example, Paul. And I, as much as I should not do this, I still beat myself up about this. But the whole goal when I was on the police department, everything always comes back to my number one passion. The only thing I've ever wanted to do is just be a musician. And so, you know, I went through all this stuff with the Amway business, all these different businesses that failed. The only reason I wanted to start a business, and this was my stated goal, was I wanted to equal my police department income so I could leave that job. And then, you know, this was pre-internet days, of course, or before the internet really was a viable media for marketers.
Yeah.
I knew that having that type of business, a mail order business, I wouldn't have to work a 40-hour week. I could work less than a 40-hour week, still equal my job income. So I'd have the extra hours to go be a musician without worrying about making money with it. So, you know, play out in bands and compose music and record with different guys and stuff like that. Well, mission accomplished. The end of, was it 96? It was either the end of 1996 or 1997. Mission accomplished. Except I kept telling myself, well, no, I need this amount of money in the bank to be successful, and or I need to be making this amount of money. So like, okay, so I equaled my police department income. Let me double that, and then I'll do my passion. And then the number kept doubling, and the number I should have stacked up in wealth somewhere kept doubling. And, you know, so 20 years later, I'm thinking, this is insane. 20 years chasing money, and the number kept going up to reach quote unquote success. You know, I need to have this amount of net worth. I need to be making this amount. And no matter how much it went up, and no matter how many times I achieved it, I still never felt successful. And it was only recently I had to take a step back and realize this is insanity. Like, this never enough feeling is stealing my joy. And never looking back, like always looking forward in a way that's like, oh my God, look how much more I have to accomplish, and look how far it is to my goal. Instead of occasionally turning around and looking back and looking at, wow, look how far I've come. No, I never did that. It was all about the pursuit of more, 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 more. I never felt successful. I accomplished all these material goals that I had, but yet never felt successful. So now, you know, I don't define success with an income amount or with a net worth amount. To me, success is, first of all, are you doing something you're passionate about? And are you making enough of an income to give you the freedom to do the things you're passionate about? Like, for example, I'm really, really grateful that I'm passionate about my business, and it provides the income I need to pursue my other passion, music. Now, that to me is how I define success. And if you can do that, you know, on $1,000 a month, in my eyes, you are a success. It just doesn't matter the income, you know. And I even had a friend who I really respect. He's a deca millionaire. He's worth $20 million. And I was telling him some of my goals around the end of last year, telling him some of my goals for 2018. And he's like, and he stops me and said, okay, that's a great goal, and I know you can do it, but by you pursuing that, how much time is that going to take you away from your studio, you know, my music studio? And I had to stop and think, like, a lot. I mean, I'll be lucky to squeeze in, you know, a half hour, maybe a couple times a week. And he's like, okay, so regardless of how much money you make, are you going to be successful then? And I had to admit, no, I would not. I would actually feel like a failure, because it's pulling me away from really what my passion is.
That's very clear and beautifully described, I think, because it kind of is very real. And I think we are so conditioned to see success as the thing, the house, the car, And of course, in the US, it'll be the pool and everything else that goes with it. In the UK, we're a bit cold for pools, but you know, it's all those things that you kind of think that mean that I am successful. It's the trappings of success. It's actually fascinating. They say in the UK, they did some research. They say £77,000 is the right amount of money to earn, because it's not enough to shift your perspective too far. And it's well enough to have a good life.
I've heard similar studies in the US about that same dollar amount in dollars. And I find it interesting. And I noticed something else, Paul. So a lot of my friends are millionaires or multimillionaires And it's always more. Like, when is enough enough? They've never defined the number. When is enough enough? And it's always more, which is great if that's your thing. But in many cases, it's driven by fear. Like they've stacked up all this wealth, but mostly probably because they came from poverty. They're worried about living it. So they want to continue to stack up more. And So it's all fear-based. And my friend who's the decamillionaire worth $20 million admitted the same thing. Like, he keeps pursuing these things and keeps pursuing more, all based on fear, even though he's got enough money that he could just do nothing the rest of his life and it would even support his kids for the rest of their lives. And he said he hears the same thing from one of his friends who's worth $50 million, another of his friends who's worth $100 million. It's all fear-based. They keep stacking up more.
But the question is, you know, could you or anyone as a human being actually do nothing? Because I think that is the path to madness.
That's, you know, I know people who could do nothing, but they were never the entrepreneurial type in the first place, you know. But people who like doing this kind of stuff that we do, you know, starting businesses, figuring out. I don't think regardless of how much money we stack up, we'll ever do nothing.
No, I can't see myself ever retiring either. There'll always be something to do. And, you know, and I like, one of my passions is fixing things. I hate chucking things away. So, you know, I say, well, I'll just fix it. You know, so, you know, the lawnmower breaks. No, I just fix it. It's fine. You know, I don't, it came from my parents. It's my father used to fix everything. So I fix everything. But it's like, sometimes my wife says, you know, it is time to let go of that now. We could just buy a new one. Yeah, I guess we probably could, but I could fix it.
But that's a really valuable skill set. I don't have that because it takes a different kind of mind than I have to fix that. I always admire people who are able to do that.
Yeah, but I think it's also an edge, really, because it's like, as I said, it's like, you know, you go on with these things and really you should just give up with it because I just fix things too long. But hey, that's me. That's what I do. It's one of my passions. It's like I hate seeing things go to waste or just get trashed because, you know, we want a brighter model when in actual fact it's still functioning quite fine anyway. There's a soapbox there somewhere, so I won't step on that one. So I did have a question for you, and it's kind of slipped my mind, and I should have written it down when it came to me, which is a bit irritating. But it's been fascinating to hear that thing about, oh, that was it. Yeah, I hear a lot of the people, in our industry, very successful people, who set these huge, humongous money goals. And, you know, the famous one has got to be Gary Vaynerchuk, who wants to buy a baseball club or something, or a football club? You know, I mean, not talking millions, we're talking a couple of billion here to buy these things or something, because they are such huge things. It's like, I do wonder about that drive. But then I guess Elon Musk, you know, this is the man who's very wealthy and he wants to colonize Mars.
You know, I don't know if it's so much about money as it is about winning. So I enjoy winning, and money is a way to keep score. And I think a lot of those guys like Gary Vaynerchuk and Elon Musk, I think their passion is that doing that, building the business bigger and bigger, starting a new business, starting a new project like colonizing Mars. Whereas, you know, my whole goal, the money was secondary. The money was a means to an end to get me my freedom to do what I really wanted to do. But I know entrepreneurs like that, that that is the goal, the building of the business and the stacking up money. And they are right in their convergence zones doing that stuff. They're happy as a pig in poop.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, it's great that, that we have those people that are pushing the boundaries like that. Because, I mean, I don't think anyone would, you know, without Elon Musk, we wouldn't be in this direction at the moment. So, yeah, there's a place for them in the world. That's for sure. That's for sure.
That's for sure.
So, look, we've been talking for 38 minutes, which is great. I'm really, really thoroughly enjoying this conversation. So I kind of to bring us into kind of a conclusion, I always ask this question of my guests. And it's the question is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have done?
No, not that I can think of. You asked some really interesting questions and questions that I'm not normally asked. So I've really enjoyed this.
That's good. That's what I set out to do. So, all right. If there's nothing left to ask you, let's put something on the table. For someone who is in this question, what would your piece of advice be? How do I go and find my passion if I haven't a clue what it is?
So yeah, I do hear that question a lot, or various versions of it. You know, I think it's probably going to be some form of trial and error. I feel like I was really lucky that I found my passion at such an early age, you know, and now whatever it's been 46 years later, you know, it still hasn't left me. I'm more passionate about it now than I was as a kid. So I feel like I was really lucky to define that. But if someone doesn't know their passion, I think they're probably just going to have to start trying various things and see what resonates with them. Although, you know, I think you're probably already going to have an inkling about what your passion is if you'll just think back to your childhood, back before dreaming was beaten out of us by the school system or by the world, whatever it was, or, you know, being told to grow up and get some realistic goals. I think if you think back to your childhood, that might be a good place to start. Mm. And then, you know, maybe it's just exploring that a little more. If, you know, or I think it's just going to have to be trial and error. You're going to have to try some things, involve yourself in them, do some research, you know, actually get your hands dirty doing it, to find out what resonates with you.
Yeah. Yeah. The overriding theme that seems to be coming through from lots of people is you've got to take some risks. You've got to get out there and do stuff, because your passions you don't find your passion in a way like that. It kind of finds you in a way. You kind of do stuff and suddenly, oh, I quite enjoyed that. It's about following the energy, I guess.
I totally believe that. Like I never, if somebody would have told me, oh, Dan, you're going to get really passionate about this direct response marketing and this mail order business stuff, you know, back in the day, I probably would have said, what? Nah. I mean, yeah, I guess, you know, if I can make money at it, that's cool. But get passionate about it? No. But, you know, after I was in it, after I was doing it, and felt the thrill of winning, you know, running the ad and seeing calls come in and sales being made, you know, I got bit by the bug then, but I never would have found that passion had I not just started doing it in my typical, you know, ready, fire, aim fashion. You know, most people are paralyzed by analysis, the old paralysis of analysis. Sometimes you just got to get busy doing it. And the passion will find you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably true. Well, thank you so much for your time this afternoon, for you, this evening for me. It's been a really enjoyable conversation. And I just want to, so Dober and Dan, I just want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with me.
Well, thank you. The pleasure was mine, Paul. I had a great time. And again, thank you for the invitation.
That's great.
Okay, the interview had just finished and Dan and I were talking about some practicalities. And then I started to explain why I was doing this series of podcast interviews. And the interview went off in a completely unexpected direction. And in some way, it pulled it right back into what I wanted to discuss with him. And I'm so pleased and gratified that Dan was gracious enough to say, yes, we should include it in the program. And so from what you're about to hear on in now was not part of the original interview.
No, it's fine. That's what this is all about. I mean, for me, it's a journey of discovery, really, in terms of, you know, I think this has been precipitated away by my father died last February. And I mean, he was his time to go. But what I realized, I watched over the last 5 years of his life, just ebb away from him. He just lost motivation. He lost meaning. He just disappeared and he just became a shell of the man he was. I thought to myself, how does that happen? And that's kind of what made me start thinking about my own journey.
Yeah. First of all, I'm sorry for your loss. Oh, it's tough.
It was his time to go. He was so desperate to leave. I mean, he really wanted to go. And don't keep. I have no problem with him, but him dying. He was 89, and it was his time. Really was. But, you know, but thanks for the comment.
I've seen, you know. So I mentored with this copywriter Gary Halbert, and I saw him go through that. Just kind of lose his purpose. And. And he kept writing copy, but it was just for the money. And, you know, I've had those fears like, gosh, what if I lose my purpose? What if I lose my passion for living? What if I feel like I'm no longer relevant? You know, knock on wood, it hasn't happened, but, you know, I'm on a search too. I want to find out the truth. You know, everything. Seems like everything I was told was a lie and everything I was told was going to make me happy and I would be successful. You know, it didn't necessarily do that like I was promised.
Right. I'm pleased I'm still recording because you just said something which is absolute gold. So what's your answer to that one?
Geez, I don't know how far down the rabbit hole you want to get, but
you don't have to answer. I'm not going to put you on the spot on that one, but it's that is where I'm looking to go. That's what I'm trying to understand.
Well, so you're going to hear my complete rookie answer because the longer I'm on this planet, the more I realize I don't know hardly anything. But so I grew up. As a kid, my parents made me go to church. That was like a cultural thing back then. You know, our family just went to church on Sundays.
Yeah.
And we went to the Methodist church. And, you know, then when I got a little older, I started going down the path and going to a Pentecostal church and exploring that. And then, you know, I even went through periods of my life that you could say I was agnostic or perhaps even atheist. And, but yet, you know, what I'm trying to find out is what is the purpose of this all? And I don't have the answers to that yet, but there is something that keeps coming up in various places where I've searched and from several different people. And this will sound so corny and this will sound, people who know me will think this. They won't be able to believe this is coming out of my mouth because I was quite a skeptical, battle-hardened ex-cop, you know, very, just very, what's the word? Just very disillusioned with the
cynical.
World. Cynical is the word I was looking for. Very cynical. But the thing that keeps popping up is that it's, you know, it's just about love.
Yeah.
And loving yourself and loving others. And I probably do a really, really crappy job of that. I know I do. I know I do a crappy job of it with myself. I'm really hard on myself. I really beat myself up. And how to love others, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out how to do it. I found that when I listen to someone intently, like I really listen, not just with my ears, but with my heart and soul, to try to figure out the meaning between the words, try to figure out what they're really trying to say with their words, but it's deeper than that. Then I feel like, and I've had feedback on this, that people feel understood. Mm-hmm. And maybe consequently loved. And this, I mean, it's your fault, man. You brought the topic up, but that's one of the things that I just keep being led back to is love. It's just being present, loving yourself and loving others. I think, again, Paul, I'm on the journey too. I think that if that is not the reason for being, it is definitely one of the top
I think you're onto something. And this is an exploration for me too. So I'm so appreciative that you said that. Because you've taken this interview into a complete new journey, into a new location. And I was going to stop recording, and I'm still recording this. So I am so delighted that you said that, because I think it's just, it is something in that place. I mean, I don't know if you have,
children. I mean, that just never came about for me.
One of those, that's one of those opportunity journeys and things. But I recognize that moment of specialness when I first held my son, and it's something I can never describe to someone. And it's one of those things that you as someone who's not had children cannot appreciate, but you can appreciate it in other times. I mean, it's like the passing of someone. If you see someone dying, I think there's a place there. I mean, not dying badly. I mean, someone who's genuinely just that point of leaving. I think the all those special moments.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Never experienced that one yet.
I'm rarely, again, you brought it up. You asked, so that's why I went down this road. I'm rarely able to talk about it, mostly because I'm not doing a good job.
You're doing a fantastic job of it. Doing a fantastic job of articulating it.
And the way I figure, like, let's say I'm wrong. Let's say this whole existence is not about love. So worst case scenario, I get better at loving myself, and I do everything within my power to love others, to understand, help them feel listened to and understand and loved, then you know what? Even if I'm wrong, that's not a bad existence. A lot of good.
And
will
I tell
come
you something,
that.
Dan, you do love yourself. And I tell you how I know that is because you give time for your music. You said to me that your music is 7 o'clock to 8 a.m. every morning. And that is a sign of someone that loves themselves.
Yeah, and I've not done a good job of that.
But you're doing it now.
Past. But now, I'm doing exactly. I'm doing it
and
now.
And as someone said, yesterday is history. Tomorrow's a mystery, and today is a gift. That's why we call it the present.
So true.
Anyway, look, I think this has been a fantastic conversation, and I'm gonna hope you don't mind. Can I keep that last bit and put it into the recording? You okay with that?
Yeah, please do, because the few times when I've shared similar things like that on my podcast, I got an overwhelming response. I actually thought I was going to get big response of people saying, hey, don't talk about that stuff. This is about business and making money. No, I actually got a lot of supportive comments. So I think a lot of people are on a search also, and they're ready to hear about those.
I think they are. And I think that's why we have the trouble that we have in the world. That's why we have social media addiction and Netflix binging and alcohol problems and all these things, because people are trying to avoid the feelings or trying to avoid going there for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this has gone.
Well, I give you kudos to you for the bringing the topic up and speaking Thank about you. On your podcast. You so Good much. For you.
So, Dan, if anyone wants to get in touch with you or get access to your materials, well, what's the best way to do that?
My main site is at DobermanDan.com. All one word, Doberman like the dog, and Dan.com. So there are a lot of articles up there and essays and case studies about marketing. And if someone chooses to opt into my list, they'll see my process now, which pretty much revolves around promoting my new book entitled Just Sell the Damn Thing. So they'll see how I market my own stuff if they want to opt in there at DobermanDan.com.
And there's a chance to get their book at some preferential rate, isn't there something?
Yes. It's available right now for a penny, plus shipping and handling.
Okay.
But yeah, can't beat that. Get a book for a penny. And a real book, not a digital book. I actually send you a hard copy.
Oh, wow. That's unusual. That's very unusual. Well, that's fantastic. So, okay. Thank you very much for that one. I'm sure my listeners will appreciate it. Anyway, thank you for such a wonderful conversation. I really, really enjoyed it tonight. So thank you very much.
Oh, so did I. Thank you very much for the invitation. I had a great time.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Doberman Dan. If you'd like to follow up on his materials, please check out the website, as the links will be below the recording. If you enjoyed this show, share it on social media, or better still, subscribe to it on your podcast app. It only remains me to say, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time.